Hello and welcome to a Nations League special of the Buzz Sports Show with myself, Mark McCadden, with John O'Dowd and David Kent, and with a special guest in the studio, Roddy Collins. Also joining us on the phone is Andy Reid to discuss Ireland's upcoming games against Denmark and Wales, and also some proper football. Isn't that right, Roddy?
That's what I would call it, yeah, proper football. And a proper footballer is an Andy being one of them people that could, you know, you would enjoy seeing with the ball at the feet and just talking about it. I remember playing against Andy's father and Andy's uncle, Billy and Victor, and they were proper footballers, you know, as football goes. Before all this coaching came in, they were allowed to dribble the ball and make their own decisions on the ball instead of being told it goes from A to B, like what we have structured now. But not just driving down to the studio and coming down. I remember meeting Wesson when he was 17 and I brought Ray Graydon over. I think he was at Bristol Rovers at the time to sign him. And he ended up signing for Shelbourne as a professional. And then I think he went to Livingston or whatever. But even back then, you could identify the type of players that came from a certain, a certain part of the city. I came from Cabramatta. We produced a lot of good footballers. But kids that had a mind of their own and had a skill set and an ability to play with a football and had a freedom that was enjoyable to watch at senior level. And as I keep saying, without blowing smoke there, Andy, you were one of them. Well worth watching.
No, well, listen, Roddy, it's funny you should say that because I've been banging on about this for quite a while now. I mean, I got my my ability, my know-how and my feel for the ball from being out in the street and playing with the other kids and playing in the kids' five-a-side tournaments and, you know, going to watch my dad playing in them five-a-side tournaments. That's where I got my love for the game and my feel for the game and my feel for the football. And it's very interesting what you say, especially for from a young age, not being coached, being let to express yourself, find out what you're good at and find out what you're not. And I think it's a real, real problem at the moment that kids aren't allowed to express themselves from a really, really young age. So being get hold of too young and coached too young and they're not developing that skill set, you know, they're not doing them cribs, they're not doing them drag backs, them things that you need to do out in the streets. And another thing that I think goes along with that is that winning mentality and that pride. We, you know, I've spoke about it before, we played against a street from around the corner and we didn't want to lose to them. We played on the pitch, you know, we didn't want to lose to them, you know, it was a real pride thing going on there. And I think that's gone out of society and it's creeping into the game now where you're seeing this lack of technical players being produced.
It's funny, Andy, though, you talk about the passion, right? And we used it on the street playing football. I was brought up in Carbra where you were dragged in for your bread and jam and, you know, you play up to 21 in the ace and you just couldn't get enough of it. But I have a grandson there who's on this Game Boy, whatever I don't know what you call it, I'm not into it. And the passion he shows for that. So the passion is there, Andy. I just don't think the environment is there for the kids anymore. You can't let them out. But we're talking about these academies and so many hours of development kids could have. You know, there are kids playing the hours, but they're being coached out of it. I mean, I've done my badges, my pro licenses, and I don't know, I wasted money on all of them, by the way. But the thing about it is, it's all structured now. And I always had an argument, and I would probably have the same argument with you, Andy, why you didn't get so many caps, and why Wesson in particular didn't get so many caps under Trapattoni. I just felt that if you were on the ball, or if Wesson were on the ball, you could engage three or four different players on the pitch in their mind. If that makes sense, where you could drop your shoulder, pop it one way, turn it another way, pick another pass out, where this structure stuff is, well, I know if so-and-so gets on the ball, he's going to play it inside, he's going to play it there for him to go there. There was no inventiveness. And I had this argument that people used to laugh at me and I'd say, Trapattoni will not pick these lads because they have the ability within their mind to see four pictures, not just one or maybe two in an emergency. And that was my argument. And Andy, I'm going to ask you straight out now. Would there be any credence in that, or is that just me being mad off the wall?
No. Well, listen, I would agree with you in respect that I wasn't the type of player that fitted into the way he wanted to play, and Wesley wasn't. He wanted players who would keep the ball simple, who would kind of pass it sideways and not put the ball at risk, try and get the ball forward early and maybe try and get people off that. And he didn't really want creative players in the midfield area of the pitch. And that's why me and Wesley didn't fit into the way he wanted to play. I disagree with that. It's not my mentality on football. He was a manager at the time, so obviously you've got to respect the way he wants to go. But I disagree with that. You need to have people on the ball in the middle of the park that can be creative. And I think we're still suffering from that now. You know, that type of we're lacking that type of player in our setup at senior level now at the moment. And I think it probably stems from that kind of period. You know, you have to, when you get on the ball, you have to be able to deal with the ball in tight areas with players around you. You have to be able to come up with something a little bit different. You have to be able to be creative. And you have to want to entertain as much as you can as well. You know, obviously, winning is vitally, vitally important. But you want to deal with a bit of style and, you know, a little bit of panache. And that's what we're struggling with at the moment in senior level. And I'd be hopeful, though, you know, that we could produce players coming through. I'm working with the underage setup at the moment. And they're trying to shift the focus onto technicality again, as opposed to kind of structure and, you know, and the athlete type of thing. And I think it's creeping into the English game as well with the likes of David Silva and Bernardo Silva and Hazard and people like that. I think the technicality is starting to kind of rear its head again, and hopefully we can benefit from that in Ireland as well.
Well, even going back to when I was down in Mansfield, we played Forest a few times, and I remember Clough. You know, if you can receive a ball and pass a ball and open out, you're good enough. But yeah, his main player was Robinson. And he encouraged people, when you get the ball, give it to Robinson, let him create. So that receive and pass has to be there, Andy. But look, getting back to the other thing, I mean, you can't have 10 Andy Rage or 10 Wessels, but if you could have 3 or 4 in the team, I think it'd be a fair bet to get into it. Because for me now, I'd rather watch the Championship than the Premier League. It's becoming a game of chess, you know.
Yeah, just speaking of the Championship there, Roddy, a lot of people have mentioned Jack Grealish, obviously, over the last 18 months, 24 months, as the player who could have taken over from the likes of Andy and Wes Hoolan as that creative number 10 in a way, a player who looks forward, a player who looks to create things. And Martin O'Neill's even gone on the record, I think, as saying that, oh, if he had it declared for us, he would have 25 caps by now. But is that really the reality? Would he have had? Would he have been encouraged to be that player, or would he have found himself sitting on the bench and more functional, more pedestrian, more players who would either play it backwards or sideways? Would they have been preferred, really?
Well, I we're crying out for a player like that. We're crying out for someone like that that's going to want the ball and be able to just glide by people in the right areas, not too far up the pitch, but just linking up a little bit, creating things. And, you know, back in my day, there was Duncan McKenzie, there was Frank Worthington, there was Stan Bowles, there was obviously George Best. There was players that, you know, would drop into these areas. Then you had Man United, you had Cantona, you had, what was the other man's name? Remember the fella came from Sports?
Oh, Andy Teddy Sheringham afterwards.
No, not him. The other fella, he was from Turkey, I think he was. Came from Spurs, Andy. Anyway, he used to drop in. And they're, like, you need them link players. You have to have them to bring the best out of your other players. But, you know, you could be hit, you're blue in the face. Would you get a game for Ireland? I don't think so. As Andy said, the way it's gone now, and I even watched a training session there not so long ago, and the ball was in the air more than it ever was on the ground. And that was a training session where you'd expect it knee high and nothing higher. But it's up to the front men, as Andy said, pick up the bits behind. And even Liam Brady was a victim of that tactic when Jack Charlton was there, another in the same mould as Andy and Wezzo. You know, so maybe that's just the way we have to play. I don't know, playing blood and guts with the likes of McLean, who'll run into brick walls, and I've no problem with his enthusiasm in that, but I don't think he's going to hold on to the ball for too much to bring other people into the game. But there you go, that's just my opinion on it, you know.
Andy, can we talk a wee bit now about the games coming up now? We've got Denmark and Wales, Denmark on Saturday, Wales on Tuesday. What are you looking for from these two games in the wake of what we saw last month?
You're looking for a reaction. First of all, you're looking for that little bit of pride. You're looking for that bit of hunger inside, that bit of desire. Unfortunately, where we're at the moment, we're looking at that thing, right, let's not get beat. That's the way we have to go back to basics in that respect. You know, everybody wants to say, oh yeah, let's play great football and we want to create loads and create this. We're not at that stage at the moment, if we're being honest. We just need to make sure we don't get beat, we've got a solid shape, and then hopefully that we can nick something at the moment. I done comms on the Denmark-Wales game, and Denmark were really, really good, I have to say. You know, they were excellent all over the pitch. I just felt with Denmark, if they lack a top class striker, if they had a top class striker, they'd probably be higher in the rankings than what they are. So it's going to be a really, really tough game, the Denmark game in particular. And we need to give a good account of ourselves. We need to stand up and be counted. And you need to have a little bit, you need to have that desire inside, where you can say, okay, listen, we need to put things right from last month. It was really, really disappointing. Who's going to stand up? Who's going to stick out their chest and say, all right, I'm going to be here today. I'm going to show up. I'm going to put my foot in. I'm going to win my tackles. I'm going to win my headers. And then when I get on the ball then, I'm going to have the courage to pass it properly and the courage to hold on to the ball when I need to and pass it when I need to. So that's what you would like to see. But let's not make any mistake. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a really, really difficult couple of games.
Andy, what did you make of the three at the back formation that Martin O'Neill used against Poland in the friendly? And do you think it's something that we should use more often starting on Saturday?
Listen. Judging by the Wales game, where we were really, really vulnerable by balls down the side of the two centre backs in a back four, we probably needed to go to three at the back. We were so susceptible. I mean, we see Ramsey making runs in there and Lawrence making runs in there and getting on the ball and scoring goals from their positions just on the outside of the two centre backs. So you negate that if you've got three centre backs. It gives you a little bit more stability there. It leaves you a little bit more vulnerable if the wing backs have pushed on in the wider areas. But you don't mind giving away a little bit of space in the wider areas if you've got your three centre halves and you say, right, when the ball comes into the box, we're going to head it and we're going to kick it. If that gives you that little bit of stability. So I think it was probably a wise move and probably something there that might be kind of taken on from here on forward to give us a little bit of stability in that kind of central area of the defence.
Yeah, and you mentioned that stability, and you were talking a minute ago about how Denmark don't really have a world-class or a world-elite striker. So, say three at the back does work against Denmark, do you think Martin O'Neill will then persist with it against Wales when you've got someone like Gareth Bale going to run, and as you mentioned, the likes of Ramsey, maybe Ethan Ampadu as well coming forward?
Well, I think it's something that Wales do particularly well. They make runs beyond the defence, attacking runs beyond the defence. Ramsey does it particularly well. Lawrence done it particularly well. I've seen quite a bit of him playing for Derby, and he's been in really, really good form. And obviously, you've got the threat of Bale. So it might be something that might be better suited to the Wales game, but you want to try and get a little bit of familiarity, a little bit of stability going in there. So I would imagine that you probably will go with it in this Denmark game, because you've got to remember that you've still got Eriksen playing in that number 10 position, and he can be a real, real handful. He can score goals from the edge of the box. So it might be useful to have the three centre-backs and maybe, say, release one of them just a little bit from the back three to go and close down Eriksen if he's getting on the ball. So I think it might be a tactic that will be used over the next couple of games.
It's a great tactic, Andy, but it takes a bit of work. It does take a bit of work to get that three and a five across, as a coach. And I'm just thinking, if we do play it, looking at the personnel we have, we probably don't have much choice other than to play. But if you want to fill a pitch and be tight and defensive at home, you're going to end up with a five at the back, right, where you're going to really be depleted in your attacking options. I always believe in a 4-4-2, and if you have one dropping in to help out, you can make it nice and solid there. I know what you're saying about one coming out into the pick up the number 10 from the back three, but I just think for solidity, I love the I think a 4-4-2 fills a pitch, obviously with one dropping in to help out as a five in midfield, still giving you the option to get up the pitch. Well, the way we're going to do is probably going to be a lump up, but
I know exactly what you're saying, and I do agree with you to a certain extent. I just think with the three centre backs, it's just that central area of the pitch that in and around the goal that we've really, really struggled with. And did massively so in the Wales game, and I would be up for kind of shoring that up. You're right, and exactly right in what you're saying. The problem that you've got is if you're under the cosh a little bit, it does end up with five at the back, and then if you've got five at the back, then obviously up the top end of the pitch, then you're a bit light. So do you get pinned in then? So you've got to kind of walk out your attacking options, and you've got to get strikers that are going to get hold of the ball to be able to get you up the pitch. Otherwise, you're going to get pinned in. And so, it is a little bit of a catch-22 situation. I just believe that where we're at now, we're not really at the expansive football stage. We're just we need to grind out some results at the moment.
The survival stage, and Andy, you know better than anyone. You go to the Aviva under the current circumstances and the the pressure, I don't know if you call it pressure, but the expectations, you know, like everyone's a reaction and you're pinned in for 10, 15 minutes, the crowd's going to turn. There's no doubt about that, you know. But the one, not looking too far forward, but Ampadu, for me, I think he's class. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Well, obviously against Ireland, he was brilliant. Ran the show from there, you know. So, as I always said, Andy, as a manager, if you can win that middle section of the pitch, you've always got a better chance of winning the game, or at least not losing the game. And I think that's where, you know, you're talking about, even if we went four and put Moyler in there now, Andy, to look after it, maybe drop in as a third centre-half when it really comes down wide, and then step in and look after the number 10. But then again, that takes coaching as well. But just the personnel, yeah, you know.
I just think with that, I think with the four, if you're going to do that, if you are going to play the four midfield, then they need to play narrow. They need to play really, really narrow. Otherwise, because Denmark and Wales, they will both play with three in the middle of the park. So we need maybe the 10 dropping in as kind of to get on the ball as well in Denmark's case. So the four will need to be narrow. Yeah. Otherwise, it needs to be a three in midfield or else you'll just get popped down. And that's what happened against Wales over there. We played four, and the two wider men were playing two wide, and the two lads in midfield, they couldn't get anywhere near the ball. They were just getting outnumbered, and Wales' movement was good. So you need to be narrow in that. And again, I would say give away the space in the wide areas. You know, that's the least danger out in the wide areas. Make sure the centre of the pitch is really, really solid, because that's where Wales' strength is. It's where Denmark's strength is. It's down the centre of the pitch.
And my belief in football, you know, a little bit of success. I won a league with a diamond with weakish players. If you can get a diamond right and control the area, once that can put the foot in and keep the ball between them, it gives you a little bit of time to get your fullbacks, to give you a bit of width as well. Like, it is tactically hard work to get it done, but, you know, you could come into loads of different permutations, why, what and how and what we should have done, but personnel dictates everything, you know.
Roddy, I couldn't agree with you. We played a diamond at Forest when Paul Hart was manager, and it was an absolutely fantastic formation. If you get everybody knowing what they're doing, you know, because it can be very, very flexible. It can just as easily become a four if you need to flatten out. If you're on top, it can just as easily that, you know, the two wider men can push on a little bit, and then you've always got the safety of that person in the number four position sitting in front of the back four. I think the diamond is a really, really good formation. It does take a lot of work and it takes a lot of understanding. And the problem with international football is you don't always get loads of time to kind of work on them different formations. But in theory, and I've played it and played it successfully and really enjoyed it, I think the diamond is a fantastic formation.
Who was your left back when you played that time?
We had Jim Brennan, who was playing left back. A guy went on to play for Norwich as well. Canadian lad. Left back. And we had Matty Louis-Jean at right back, was a French guy, and both of them were really, really attacking full backs.
Brilliant formation.
So,
brilliant.
So you know, I could take up little positions just inside on the left hand side, you know, and get on the ball there. And the full back didn't know whether to cut in or not. If he came
our full back
would overlap, we'd slip him in. Yeah. If he didn't come in, I'd get the ball in turn and I'd be in acres of space. Well, so it was a catch 22 for them. But it's a kind of a chicken and egg kind of thing. You need to know what you're doing and you need to be solid. But the good thing about it is, like what I said, you've always got that safety guard in the person in the number four position just sitting in front.
Andy, probably the most in-form Irish player playing in England at the moment is Matt Doherty for Wolves. He's playing like for a top six, top eight club week in and week out. Why has he not made a start for Ireland yet? And is this the time to give him his head?
Well, listen, I think he has to play. In my opinion, he's the most informed player. He's been excellent. I've seen him and he's been really, really good. He's obviously very, very highly rated at Wolves. I think he has to play. A problem that he has had more recently since Seamus Coleman has got back from injury is that obviously Seamus is in there and he's, you know, the first choice kind of right back. But with a player of that quality, we don't have too many players of that quality. We need to find a place for him there, whether it's right side of midfield, whether it's right wing back or right side centre back. We need to find a place for him somewhere in that team, because as I said, we don't have too many quality players like that. So he needs to be in the team in some capacity.
Go ahead, Roddy.
Well, if we play a three, he has to play.
Yeah.
But the argument, you know, and from a manager's point of view, Andy, as well, right? you're getting a bit of media pressure to play Doherty. You're getting a bit of media pressure to select other players. And as a manager, you can go, right, I'll put them in. If they struggle, like Savarta, if they struggle, well, you put the pressure on me. If they play well, I'm home and dry. I don't think Martin is that type. I think Martin will actually go the opposite and say, well, the media's not going to pick my team. You know, so I'd be, I mean, if it goes a three and Doherty doesn't play, it's going to be a tricky one if his replacement doesn't do the business, you know. But I think his problem is, as you said, Andy, right back is sorted, and then he's playing wing back for Wolves. I mean, he's been playing right back for Wolves for a long time in the Championship, but not great recognition from anybody just suddenly now, because Wolves play a fantastic style of football that allows him time to get involved and come inside and get a few strikes, a couple of goals as well. That's why he's getting a bit of notoriety now in the Premier League. But getting back to the basics of what we want to do, I don't see him playing right back, to be honest with you. But if we go a three, it'd be a wing back.
Andy, can I just ask you, you've talked a bit about the diamond formation. Have we got the personnel for that?
I'm not too sure. Listen, the problem with it is, like I said there a couple of minutes ago, is that it takes a lot of work. They're really different positions. You know, it's almost like an old-fashioned inside right and inside left, and then you've got a number 10. But the number 10 isn't an out-and-out number 10, because he kind of needs to help out the midfield at times as well. So it's a tricky one that needs a lot of work, and it needs a lot of understanding. And then you bring the fullbacks into play, like Roddy just mentioned. It was bang on that he asked me about the fullbacks, because the fullbacks are probably two of the most important players in that formation. They need to understand when they can go, when they can't go. They need to know the players that they're playing with, so they know, well, he's going to hold on to the ball, so I can afford to take a little bit of a risk here, because I know we won't give it away. Have we got the players to do it? I'm not too sure, and I don't think that we've got the time.
It's more of a club.
We don't have the players, Andy. We don't have the players. We don't have them. As you said, we need players like you that can hold on to the ball, give you a foot. And also, we need players to recognise when we haven't got the ball, who goes and closes where, because you're going to be absolutely destroyed. If you don't know, for argument's sake, if Andy was playing left side of the diamond and their fullback gets on, who goes to close him down? Andy goes to close him down, you know. So, or if your fullback is gone and who just tucks in behind him, as your centre half come over and your central number 10 marker drop in. So look, it's the best chance I had as a manager, and any club I ever got, I tried to, you know, implement it. But boy, Jesus, it's hard, honest to God, trying to get the understanding into people with and without the bubble. Getting back to the question, we don't have the Andy Reid or the Wezos that's capable of playing on either side of that to engage other people and move up the pitch in the right fashion, you know.
Just conscious of time here, Andy, with yourself now. So I just want to put a couple of topical issues from this week to you. First of all, Martin O'Neill has come out in defence of Cyrus Christie, who was heavily criticised by Alan Shearer at the weekend. I don't know if you saw the match between Fulham and Arsenal now, but Martin basically spoke about how Shearer didn't understand Christie's role in that game, how he was told to be an attacking player. And what are your thoughts on that?
Listen, my thoughts on that, Martin O'Neill should come out and stick up for him. He's one of his players. That's what you want your manager to do. You want them to come out and stick up for him. Okay, probably didn't. You know, he didn't have the best kind of game, but he probably made mistakes. But listen, we all make mistakes. But I would expect Martin O'Neill to come out and to stick up for him. And if I was him and the manager didn't stick up for me, then I'd be pretty disappointed. So I would expect him to stick up for him. And it's the right thing to do. You know, obviously you can have a chat with him and say, maybe he could have done this, and maybe he could have done that, as I'm sure his club manager did. But for Martin O'Neill to come up and stick up for him, I think it's a good thing. You know, you always want your manager on your side.
And James McLean then was talking to the media yesterday. He addressed the Harry Arter situation, said that, you know, he's welcome back into the dressing room. He was wrong to not come in last month, but it's water under the bridge now. Is that just kind of him saying this in public and having a different opinion in private, or do you think that as someone who was in dressing rooms,
probably got a little bit too much to say in the first place? I don't think he should have come out and said it in the first place, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah. He's not exactly a Robbie Keane or a Richard Dunn or somebody like that that's been that good for Ireland, where he can come out and criticise players. So it doesn't really surprise me that he's come out and he's in the press again.
I have to agree with that one. Yeah. As I said earlier, he'll give you enthusiasm, run around banging into walls, banging heads and that, but you know, as regards being subtle on the ball and in the dressing room and in the media, he has a lot to learn. And I heard his comments yesterday, and I seen him on Sky, and I was cringing, to be quite honest with you, about putting guns to my head to play and all that. But that's indicative of where the kid was reared. I walked up and around the box side in the Craig and up in Derry, and I know you have to keep promoting who you are because people feel that you should be doing it. But there you go. But he was out of order. He wasn't, as Andy said, a Robbie Keane or a Richard Dunne who's established himself and capable of saying it. But, you know, I think he got himself out of jail by coming out in public again and sort of backing up what he said. But that's, you know, not necessary.
And Andy, just on, I suppose you were talking earlier about getting back to basics. I mean, I'm kind of getting the feeling here, something similar to after the Cyprus defeat a while back. You know, it's basically we have to hit the reset button. You know, we've had a couple of really heavy competitive defeats. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say so. That would be the feeling that I've got around it. You know, I always felt that, you know, when I was playing, if you go and you have a really bad result, you know, the next game, you know, you just couldn't say, right, listen, let's get back to basics now. You know, let's start the game well. Let's start the game on the front foot. Don't give anybody time on the ball. Keep the ball. Try and get the ball into good areas. See if we can get a couple of shots and goal early doors. Try and build up a little bit of confidence. And like you say, it is the reset button. You know, you kind of back to basics a little bit and then try and build yourself into it again. Build the confidence personally and then build the confidence within the team. I would suggest that would be, you know, the way I'd be looking to go if I was a player within that team.
And arguably, Andy, the biggest boost we have this week is the tormentor in chief from last November, Christian Eriksen, is almost, well, I'd say he's almost 99%, nearly 100% certain to miss the game with his abdominal injury. Does that really make Ireland have to be braver? Because are we looking at Denmark without Eriksen as just an ordinary side? And we're at home. Should we be braver and attack this game now on Saturday?
I would be very, very careful on that one. I would be, you know, I would like to say, yeah, let's go and attack them. Let's go all out. But as I said, I don't think we're there at the moment. I said earlier, I watched their game against Wales and Eriksen scored and he was decent, but he had some other good players as well. They're very, very well organised. They're very, very well drilled. They know exactly what they're doing. You know, everybody knows the position. They will have somebody to come into that Eriksen position and fill it quite well. So, you know, it will be difficult and we'll need to be really, really on our guard. There's no reason why we can't give them a good game and, you know, why we can't get a result out of the game. You know, I wouldn't say they're, you know, they're really, really up there with the top teams, but they're still a good team and a team that I would be wary of, as we've seen in, you know, in the game, especially at Lansdowne.
And finally, Andy, Roddy obviously remembers playing against your dad and your uncle. You saw your dad play five-a-side. Do you remember seeing Roddy in action?
No, I don't. He wasn't born. Sorry about that, Roddy.
No, I'll tell you a story, Andy, right? The Coventry scout back then, and obviously around when you were around, Bunny Fulham, right? It was a bricklayer. And I'm a plasterer. And after after I come back from England, I was plastering on a site there up in Camden Court Hotel. And I hid behind a pillar. And I said to a fella, go over and ask Bunny, what was Roddy Collins like as a player? And he went, I was expecting, you know, give me comments. I did score goals and I played a bit. So he goes and he said, what was Roddy Collins like as a player? And a big hell of fucking rough out your That was it. In a nutshell, not like that rage who got nutmeg and twist torn. I just gave them a big elbow on the nose and that was it, you know. Purdue Force and Eggmans, that was me. But there you go. Got a career there, anyway. Thank God.
Sorry, six
games. I'm going to have to leg it and leave you, okay?
Andy, thanks a million for your time. Cheers.
Thanks, Andy.
And we're going to carry on the conversation with Roddy, with John and David in studio now. So, Roddy, I suppose two games now, 6 points up for grabs. What are we looking
at? Well, listening to Andy, and I agree, 6 points, 1 point up for grabs for starters. We're nearly all going into this game against Denmark. And as long as we can keep that point, that's a bonus. Because coming off the results we've had, we need some sort of a moral boost before we play the Wales game. And then if we can keep it even, Stephen, 15, 20 minutes to go, then we can talk about having a go or accept the point. But this talk about Eriksen not playing, we go gung-ho. Remember, Eriksen really excelled in the second half when we stripped the middle of the park and allowed him so much space, and he got two more goals and looked absolutely like a worldie, you know. But no, make it competitive. As Andy said, you know, don't concede in your job. Be brave on the ball and pass it to a green jersey and let the game go as long as it can without conceding a goal. And as I say, you're guaranteed 1 point if you keep a clean sheet. And then with 20, 15 minutes to go, keep an eye on it, see how we are with personnel. We could pick up a couple of injuries. Might be happy to take that point, but then it'd be game on with 20 minutes to go. And that's the decision then. Do we keep a point? Do we go for a win? Or are we going chasing a point? So that's the mentality I would have as a coach.
Yeah, I think I'd like to hope that we learn the lessons from the last game where, remember, we scored 3 minutes against Denmark in the World Cup playoff. Did well in the away leg, but then the home leg, we did go a bit more attacking than usual. Scored us 3 minutes, I think we hit the post as well. But then we all remember what happened once Denmark did get their goal, and then suddenly it was like the floodgates opened. I just think it's going to be really important to see who he starts up front, who Martin Lynch chooses for Denmark. Because it's the first time in a long time we haven't really had John Walters. He's obviously out for a few months with a broken leg. So do we go with Shane Long, who is going to chase all day? Like, might not grab a goal. He might be a bit more like not a defensive kind of attacker. Or do you go with someone maybe Aidan O'Brien, Sean Maguire's coming back from injury? He's kind of more creative players. So that's going to be the key for me, I think, as to what kind of setup Ireland will have.
Well, under the circumstances, we're going to need someone with pace.
Absolutely.
And Long is the only one going to give us that. You know, young Maguire, obviously his manager doesn't want him playing from the start. He's only come back, played 20 minutes in the recent game. So I think if Long is fit, he has to play. It's who you play off him then. Do you play with defensive midfield players going to help out and then add to the longer ball? Or do you play with someone in around that might pick something up? You know, there's loads of permutations there. We're not gifted with a great squad of players, but I think if Long is fit, he has to play, because when we are pinned in, and we're going to be pinned in, we're going to need that outlet over the back. And if they leave a little bit of space, he's going to create problems. He's going to get on it, and he's going to close space quick off the ball and gain advantage on the ball. So when you have a player like that, it can drop another team back because they're afraid to push up too far. So it will open space in the middle of the park, whether that's advantage to us or advantage to them. I prefer it was a tight middle of the park where we can go and close them down and get the forum. We're only going 10 yards rather than 15, 20 yards to go and match them where they can pop you around and make you look foolish. But getting the possession of the ball early in the game, not in the attacking area, not in the midfield area, across the back four to take the sting out of it, right, and take the play from them, I think is more of a mentality rather than going gung-ho, starting off.
Now, one of the big questions for Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane this Saturday is Harry Arter is back in the squad. He didn't turn up for the last squads. He's playing regularly in the Premier League, which is unlike a lot of our players. Does he automatically come into the first 11? And if he does, what kind of message does that send out to the other players?
Well, if the manager team and your objective is to get a win or get points, right? You have two players straight away who are under the cosh, under pressure, to perform to the max. And Harry Arter is one of them, and Doherty's the other one. Because the two of them have had their moments in the past month. One making comments about not being fitting, his face not fitting, mm-hmm. and the other one having issues with the assistant manager. I'd play the two of them. I'd play the two of them because it's game on them. You know, they have to go and perform. So regards what they give you, creative, they're going to have to roll their sleeves up and get stuck. You know, I'd pick Arter because at the end of the day, look, we're not in a position where we've 30 world-class players. They're going to say, right, we'll leave Benzema home from the World Cup and we'll bring so-and-so. We'll leave Sané away. Yeah, we don't have that. We just got to get the best out, manipulate the situation we have and motivate what we have.
Jeff Hendrick, Euro 2016, one of our best players, was deemed to have a great future, got his big move to Burnley, £10 million. Has he been a massive disappointment since? He's even lost his place under Sean Dyche recently as well. What's going on with him, Ruddy?
Well, he had a great patch before he went to Burnley. And then he started at Burnley, got a couple of cracking goals. And it could be the system. It could be the system that Burnley play. It could be the pressure in which they started the season under, you know, and last season. There's lots of different factors within a football, you know, environment that can dictate the mentality of players. Now, I thought he was going to be a top player, and I still think he will be a top player. But at this moment in time, he's struggling a bit. But he still gives you enough for me to involve him in the starting 11 for Ireland.
Does he have to be moved into that number 10 position behind the likes of Long, with two more defensive midfielders behind him? Does he need a kind of a free role to attack more?
Yeah, he will. He'll get forward, but he won't get beyond the centre forward, but he will get forward, and he can strike from distance as well. He has a good, he's a good strike on him. It depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a defensive situation, you will pick the likes of Jeff Hendrick in that situation. It's getting the balance in the middle of the park. Do we go with young Kavanagh again? The kid that he played against Paul Kavanagh, isn't he? No, sorry, Williams. Sorry,
Jimmy. Oh, Sean Williams.
Yeah. Sean Williams. A late developer, you might say, just a victim of the circumstance that we've no players or a benefactor of the circumstances where he's getting picked. I thought he'd done really well. He got himself a goal, but I just felt in the game that he'd done really well in possession. He passed too many balls backwards and sidewards for me, but he did offer himself to get possession of the ball. If you could just get him a little bit forward up the pitch, I think he'd be an advantage to just get that little link-up play, because he drops so deep and because he passes backwards and sidewards, you could, as an opposition team away at the moment, you could say, right, just drop off, let him have it there. They're not going to come any further, even if he gains possession. Where if you could get him beyond their midfield players doing that, at least when he receives it, their backs, they're going to have to turn and face him, and then we've breaking players that we can play in. So tactically, it's going to be interesting to see who's picked in the middle of the park, because I think the back three can pick itself. Well, you could go Clark or Long. I think Long could play as a defensive left back. He's played before if you want to go 4-4-2. So there's loads of little permutations there that Martin O'Neill won't be under severe pressure if any of them is picked, because it's not a gimme for anyone in the team bar maybe two or three.
Yeah, and obviously Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, they've invested a lot of time in Callum O'Dowda, and he set up the goal against Poland and he actually had a really good game. He's another one that could potentially start.
He's direct. He's similar to McLean. I actually picked him out in an under-21 game of Waterford against Italy. He was the best player on the Irish under-21 team. I think he's playing with Rocks at the time. Played on the left, now we switched him over. He has pace. Maybe it'd hold him. He is direct. See how the game settles down with that period of 20-15 minutes at the end. Maybe an introduction off the bench and say, right, on you go, and you know, get your legs open there and inject a bit of pace.
Yeah, see, that's where you got the likes of Shane Long. Shane Long is running at that defence, the Denmark and Welsh defence, for about an hour, and then suddenly really, like, O'Dowda is lightning quick. We've seen it before, and even watching him at his club as well, he can really tear his defence apart if they're tired. So that could be the way to go. If it is, get Long, get someone faster to tear them down, and then just bring on someone like O'Dowda, trying to nick a winner if it's still not all.
Well, you know, I mean, people, like, you have players that come on, they can put to be a destructive player rather than a creative player. I mean, we could be winning 1-0 and you still bring them on to go and close people down, because we're quick to do that. Like, there's lots, it's amazing the different situations. Like, people, why did he pick him at that particular time? I mean, you know, he's quick, he's direct, but we were winning 1-0. We needed, you know, he's closing people down, chasing and hurrying people. There's lots of different reasons why different players are picked. And I keep emphasising, because we're not gifted with 24, 25 Premier League players, you can do what you want. And there's no pressure. And I listened to Martin O'Neill and he said he doesn't feel under any threat. Of course he doesn't. Why would he feel under any threat? I mean, he's in a rebuilding process, as we're all been, you know. I didn't think he'd stay around, to be honest with you. And there's no pressure from above. You know, there's no one answerable to anyone, really, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that question. What do you think, potentially, if any consequences will there be if we lose both of these two matches? Do you think it doesn't really matter in the overall scheme of things that O'Neill and Keane will still start the Euro qualifiers next year in charge?
Doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, they're there to rebuild. They're answerable to nobody, in my opinion, bar the public. And that only comes in international football for a short period of time, then it's replaced by all other media, you know, stories. So the association, they don't have any real say in it, as regards only John Delaney, who would have the main say. And I think they're hunky-dory together. And it's the perfect job for any manager. But given the period of time of these games where you're in a rebuilding process, I think there's no pressure at all. And if we lose the next two games, if the performance is poor, like the Man United first half performance the other day, a manager will lose his job. But if the effort is there, the endeavour is there, and the players are shown that they want to do it, and you get one or two real positives out of it, you can say, well, okay, we didn't win, but there's a player. They're now starting to fill in the jigsaw puzzle here, and then the pressure comes in the real qualifiers.
Does the threat not come from, you know, two defeats or two poor performances, and suddenly we're facing Northern Ireland in a friendly on November and 10,000 people turn up?
Well, yeah, and to an extent, because finance dictates an awful lot, but it's going to cost an awful lot more to sack the people we have than fill the ground and make the money up. So it's a catch-22, Mark. You know, people will stay away. There's no doubt about that. And even if we win the next two games by a scrappy old, dirty old performance, people will still stay away because they've seen, you know, false dawns and, you know, we're not going to get caught up in this, you know, this situation. But look, at the end of the day, I think he's safe as a house. I think he's the best job in international football. I think Martin, who I've had great respect for over the years because I followed Celtic and Aston Villa and Leicester just because of him. I like the way they went about their business with small budgets. And I just think he's safe as houses. I think I would like to see Roy Keane leaving, to be quite honest with you, for his own sake, because I think it's time for him to move on and become a manager in his own right. So for that reason, I have great respect for Roy as well. And a lot of the stuff that comes out, even in the Insta art and all, I just can't, you know, I can't be buying into it.
Yeah, but that's the modern game, isn't it? That's the modern player. Like, does he have the temperament to manage modern players?
Well, football is football. I mean, Sarri, the manager of Chelsea, is 59. You've got the Leeds manager. What's he? You know, they're managing the modern players in the old-fashioned way. Yeah. You know, it's how you do it. It's respect more than management, because at the end of the day, you know, people talk about a pro license to manage a team. I know loads of people have pro license, they can't manage a team because they can't manage people. And likability is a major factor, plus respectability for your reputation. So you cannot question Roy Keane's reputation. Likability, apparently from people I know, I never met the man, like him, think he's funny at times. And then you've got that wanting and that demanding. I mean, okay, Roy Keane can come out and say something and he's vilified. What's his name said it yesterday? James McLean. Yeah. What's the difference?
Yeah.
What's the difference? I mean, if you're in a dressing room behind closed doors and a manager comes out and he goes in behind closed doors and he rips into you and he might get personal, by the way, suddenly it's all over the purpose. This is not the way you manage anymore. James McLean stands up, or Roy came back in his day, rips into someone. That's okay, he's a teammate. I think it's an excuse. And I'm absent. And like, even this Pogba fella, I would love to give him a kick in the arse. If I was in the dressing room with him, or even if I was managing him, I would get rid of him. But obviously Mourinho, I don't know what his agenda is there, but the likes of those players, for me, are the byproduct of the money and the comments you're making, Mark, as well. Modern players. What's modern? What's the difference? A footballer is a footballer. The modern player now, the only difference is they've more wealth and more power than the manager.
Yeah, look, I'm with you on that now. I think that the game's gone too soft, but it's a reality now. The players at 18, 19 are earning far too much money. And in fairness, it was another point that James McLean was making as well, was that he feels the footballers are too pampered, that they won't go on loan to, you know, League Two clubs because you know that they'd rather stick a photograph on Instagram of them in their Manchester City tracksuit and their flash car because that's what gives them social media kudos and so on. So you know, like I said, it's a reality of modern football.
Now, Mark, you see, modern football, are we talking about now? What time period you're putting on? So I'm going to give you a story that goes 18 years back when I was manager of Carlisle and I took a kid from Blackburn Rovers on loan. And I think he was about 19, 20 years of age. And he was earning $5,000 a week. And he came in and he was a really talented player. He lasted two loan games and I sent him back. And I got a call from his father apologising for him that he just couldn't hack the facilities, couldn't hack the pressure of in a relegation. So it was back then. It's how the manager handles it. And the media have a lot to answer for as well, because they need to say, oh, hold on, lads. But I understand the media business. They have to milk whatever they can get, to create whatever they can create, to fill pages. Because the hardest thing in the world is not managing a football team. It's filling newspaper pages. I'm sure every single day it must be a disaster to try and do that. So the more stories you get, the better. But no, modern day footballers are footballers. It's the managers now that are pampering to them, and they want to become their friends, and they want to, you know, I've seen it, and everyone's a nice guy. And I remember doing the pro license and I was told anyone that's too high maintenance, don't try and bring them around, just get rid of them. Well, if that was the case, we'd have no star players in the mould of Cantona and the likes.
Yeah, so this is where the Harry Arter situation comes back into it, because obviously that argument with Roy Keane, and we've seen the fallout from it last month, and then everything's fixed now. But like, if everyone who had fallen out with Roy Keane over the last two decades stopped playing for Ireland, we would have absolutely no players left. So I think in terms of pampering, as you mentioned, that lone player, it's like, this is how we're going to produce the future footballers. I don't think Andy Reid or Wes Hoolihan would have been too upset if they were loaned out to Torquay United, and then like they would have been able to play football. I don't think they would have minded the conditions. And that's the kind of player that we're going to need over the next decade to kind of fill this gap.
Well, if you're talking to the modern day player, you just hit the nail on the head. I think the best role model for the modern day player is Harry Kane. He went out and loaned to three or four different lower league clubs. He's the modern day player. He's a gentleman. He works really hard. He's not the most gifted technical player in the world, but he's getting making his name, scoring at the highest level. And they're the ones you look up to. Not this Pogba fella going around with a hoodie, his trousers half down off his backside and a pair of sunglasses. What's happening? I don't know what they do, whatever they do. I mean, they should be discarded, and the media should be lifting them out of it. But look, it's not the media's job to put the football house in order.
Just a little thing there that Mark hinted on a while ago about the potential poor crowd for the Northern Ireland friendly. Even for this Saturday, I'd imagine it's not going to be a sellout. Is there a huge sense of apathy around this team, Roddy, since the 5-1 against Denmark almost 12 months ago? Have a lot of Irish people totally fallen out of love and don't really care what happens this weekend? And is that sad?
I wouldn't go that far now. You know, football is an entertainment business. And there's people that go to Croke Park and go to the Aviva for the rugby and go and watch the international team as well, because it's an entertainment business. If you're losing 5-1, what's the point in going? People go, it's an event. Like, there are a lot of football. I mean, it took me only about 30,000 real football supporters in Ireland, because that's all you get on average in the League of Ireland every week. So I would call them real football supporters. The rest are people that go for an event, they meet their mates, they might have a couple of beers, they might have a cup of coffee, they might have a meal. They go, they watch the situation. And we all want to be winners, and we all want to walk away with a feel-good factor. So losing 5-1 would have been detrimental. Of course it would. The excess of players, returning would have had a factor. People can identify with certain players. And then the rebuilding process, we don't have a great... Like, for argument's sake, if we had young Rice... And we had the other kid off Aston Villa.
Grealish. Yeah.
You're going to put 10,000-15,000 more people on the gate. Because it's interesting to see, right, go and see this kid. And then it develops then as a movement. But as regards sad and thing, I mean, Irish football is sad at the minute. It's been sad for years. But, you know, you get an odd goal. We beat Wales in a great game over in Cardiff, and everything was brilliant again. We had a draw with Poland a couple of weeks ago, and everyone said, it's not... It was like a testimonial game. But look, you take out and you get when you're not winning.
Speaking of Declan Rice, what's your thoughts on it at the moment? Do you think he has his decision made?
No, he won't make his decision. Southgate will make his decision for him. He would just keep his options open for sure. And I mean, if I was a professional footballer born in London of Irish parents, he may not have the same patriotism and desire to play for as his father and relations want, or his father and uncles want him to do. He's looking from a football perspective, and football is a very, very selfish business. He's sitting with advisors telling them how short the career it is, and if you can cap for England, you're going to probably triple your earnings, where if you can cap for Ireland, he's looking at your team going, hold on a minute, we may never qualify for the next two or three championships. I don't want to be part of this. So, no, I sympathise with him. I don't have any grievance with him. And a lot of people, I think, are talking out of school. And if he comes back in 2 years as an established Premier League player, hasn't been picked for England, I'd still take him back.
Great stuff. Listen, guys, I'm afraid we're out of time. So I'd just like to thank Roddy Collins, John O'Dowd, David Kent and Andy Reid for joining us today. And thanks to the crew at Headstuff for hosting the Buzz Sports Show. Enjoy the next two games, and thanks for listening.